I want to welcome everybody back. We have a gentleman that was on the show recently. He gave us his word that he would be back, and here he is again today. I want to welcome back a former 30-year NBA veteran, a great referee, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart, Derek Stafford. How you doing, Mr. Stafford?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic.
Good, good.
Man, Derek, it is great to have you back, brother. We got a lot to talk about this evening.
I'm sure y'all do.
Hey, Ricky, I want to get right to it. I've been waiting to get Mr. Stafford back. Derek, can you kind of give us some insight today? I have a couple of surprise guests that are also going to be on the line. You'll know who they are pretty soon. But I wanted to ask you about this. I've been watching these games, and I know a lot of fans are kind of perplexed sometimes what's going on. Could you kind of explain a little bit, not too much in depth, but tell us what's up with this landing zone? Where is a player, a shooter and a defender, where are they supposed to land according to the rules?
Well, you can debate what's right and what's wrong, and I don't have a problem with that. But the way it's set up is the onus is on the defensive player. In other words, the defensive player is only allowed his space to go up and come down. The offensive player is allowed to go forward. He's allowed to go backwards. That's just the way the rule is written. So if a defensive player goes up on a pump fake or any type of fake, or he just jumps and he doesn't go straight up and straight down, if he goes toward the offensive player, he's at fault. So if now the offensive player comes down on him, or if defensive player lands between the offensive player's legs, and there's a possibility that he may land on his ankle and get injured, he doesn't have the space to come down. Unfortunately, even though both players went vertical and they both went at a little bit of an angle, the onus is on the defensive player if there's any contact.
Derek, I want to get two gentlemen involved in this show, if I hope you don't mind. They both attended the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And they're actually on. Ricky, can you bring the two gentlemen on?
I think we have one of these great gentlemen here.
What's the AO calling in?
Okay, well, we're supposed to be having, it's supposed to be Anderson Hunt and Larry Johnson.
Ooh.
Are you guys there?
Yeah.
How you guys doing?
What's up, man? It's A Hunt, man.
Anderson, I'm glad you're on the show, man. I got Derek Stafford on here, man. Hello. I got an interesting show today. We're talking about verticality. We're talking about what's going on as far as guys contesting shots and where are you supposed to come down. So I'm glad you guys tuned in. Do you have Mr. Johnson with you?
Mr. Johnson has not called in yet.
Okay.
No, he's upstairs checking out. We downstairs at the hotel.
Anderson, say hello to Mr. Stafford for me. I know you're familiar with Derek Stafford.
Oh, you're talking about the great referee, the great Derek Stafford.
Hey, what's up, Mr. Hunt?
How you doing, man?
Sir?
It's a pleasure.
I'm doing
it's
great.
It's a pleasure,
you
man.
Too. Thank you. You
All
as well.
Right.
Hey,
I
Anderson.
To...
Yeah.
Let me just ask Anderson this, Derek. Hey, Anderson.
Okay.
A guy who has done his job as well as Derek Staff has over his NBA career. And I'm sure there were probably times you didn't agree with him. But what is that level of respect that you guys get from a guy out there working hard, trying to call a game with you great athletes out there going 100 miles an hour?
Oh man, you gotta give him the utmost respect, man. Cause like a lot of calls this year, these guys are human, man, and humans make mistakes. But these guys, man, they got a tough job. You know, I know they traveling around the country, you know, but still they have a tough job, man. And I, you know, even when I was playing, I gave the refs all the respect. All while I was, you know, playing, even coming up at Southwestern under Perry Watson, I was taught to get a referee's respect. That's just how I was taught coming up in Detroit.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate you.
Oh, yeah. You are. That's nothing, man.
I want you to stay on the line, Anderson. Derek, I want to get to this. You know, we talked about the landing zone. Tell me, now you got a lot of players that still – I watched the game last night, and you got a lot of plays that are called right consecutively, offensive illegal screens. What is your definition of what's a legal screen? We know you're supposed to be set, but what's the angles? I mean, how do you determine if a guy is setting an offensive illegal screen or not?
Well, let me say this first so that you guys understand this, because I heard Shaq mention this the other night on TNT when he talked about consistency. But you got to understand that everybody doesn't see a play the same way, even though we're NBA officials. I mean, there are certain things that I'm going to see that maybe a first or a second year player referee won't see. The same type of vision that a point guard may have, one point guard may have, that another point guard doesn't have. So that's where people get confused sometimes. You've got to realize that everybody doesn't have the same judgment. Now, the guy has got to give the defensive player an opportunity to stop and change direction. So a lot of that is determined by the speed of the player, how fast the player is moving, coming toward the screen. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, once the contact is made, do you now move laterally to push the defensive player even further away from the man he's trying to guard? Now, if they switch, that makes it a little bit different situation. Now, if they switch, that guy's going to be on him so the other guy can go around to pick up the guy with the ball. So that even gives that screener a little more leeway. And that's why you might see a screen and you say, oh, hey, look, he's moving too much. Well, the key to that is that they switched. So that player wasn't trying to get around him anyway. So we gave that screener a little bit of latitude because they switched. So it's deeper than what people think it is. But it still boils down to I might see the same play as another referee, even a veteran, and he might think that the contact was marginal, and I might think it was enough to call a foul. And that's the unfortunate part of what we do, because for some reason everybody expects all 63 referees to see all the plays the same way. It's virtually impossible.
Yeah.
Wow, good answer.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ricky.
Yeah. No, that's really good, Derek.
Wow.
My question is, when you got a heated series like Golden State and Houston, and I know the last time you were on, you talked about how much time you guys do preparing, watching film, just like the teams do in scouting. How do you handle
– right?
And you're in a series, guys going after each other every other night. What do you do differently than you might do in a regular season, preparing for a regular season game?
First, I'm gonna watch every game leading up to my game so that I can have a good feel for the personalities. I can have a good feel for how the teams are playing to make sure that, we don't see two players now having an issue. For example, Harden got hit in the face by Green. You know he didn't like it. And then the other night he came back and hit him in the face again. So now you got to be aware of that, because now you don't know if somebody on Houston's team is going to retaliate, Harden's going to retaliate. And these type of things you only know by watching the games. So you have to watch the games so you can be prepared to come into the game. Now, I'll watch the tape, and I'll see movements. I'll try to get James Harden shot down to make sure he's not traveling. I'll watch his footwork to make sure I'm good on that. And then just mentally, I mean, I am totally, totally, totally locked in for that particular game. I'm going to get up, get my rest, make sure that I get a little workout in. I mean, and I'm coming to the game locked in from start to finish. And I got to be ready to work 48 minutes. And I do that for every regular season game, but for the playoffs it's different. You know, everything is on the line. Every foul counts more. You put a guy on the bench, you hurt his team. You miss a play, you hurt his team. So you really want to lock in, because it's a 4 out of 7 series. One game can swing it. So you really want to be locked in. Now, does everybody do the same thing? I can't answer for everybody.
Wow. Good stuff, Derek. DG?
Yeah, I'm kind of just to hear that how it really goes on. A lot of stuff that people don't know behind the scenes, hearing it from an actual guy that's been in the fire is fantastic. I know a lot of times, Derek, I want to ask you because, you know, you see these guys playing, and we got all these big guys. I'm going to use Joel Embiid for an example. I know he's had injuries throughout his career, starting in college. And then you look at some of these guys, Anthony Davis, even this year, LeBron. So you see guys breaking down, and I don't think all of it's because of age. Do you think the season could possibly be a little too long? What do you think about shortening the season? Would that be good for – I know we know it's about revenue, but what do you think about that idea as far as keeping the guys healthy and being able to play throughout the whole year? Is that a thought for you?
I definitely think the season is too long, just like I think the playoffs are too long. But it's so much money involved, it's kind of hard to shut it off. I mean, 3 out of 5 is more than enough to decide who goes on to the next round. 3 out of 5 is more than enough to see who the champ is. I mean, that's in my opinion. And the regular season, 82 games, it's hard, man, and it gets harder. The travel, the stress, the wear and tear, you know, you're trying to stay in tip-top shape year-round, guys working out. So it's definitely too long in my opinion, but who wants to sacrifice giving up the money? That's the key. Nobody wants to make that sacrifice.
Hey, Rick, it made you laugh. Hey, Rick, I want you to think, you know, the year that the Spurs won, the strike-shortened season, 56
right.
games. And that I've always thought about a 56 to 66 game schedule. Derek, do you think that's about is that probably good in a good area?
I always thought between 60 and 70 would be more than enough games. In my opinion, you're losing 12, you know, 12 to 22 regular season games. I mean, that's a lot of games, but you got to realize guys go from playing college, you know, 20, 25, maybe 30 max for somebody who wins it all to playing 72 games. That's a lot of basketball, and especially you got to work in the off season so you'll be ready when the season starts back up. That's a lot of work, and that's a huge jump. I mean, just doubling it. You know, from 25 to 50. I mean, that's a lot for a guy coming out of college or coming out of high school. And high schools play even less. So I don't know who came up with the 82. I know when we first started, even when I got hired, we were on life support, so we didn't know whether we were going to make it or not. So we had to try to make as much money as we could. But now I just think somebody needs to take a step back and say, you know what, we're doing well, we made enough money, we need to cut the schedule. But it's, hey, you're cutting off a lot of money.
Yeah, those are a lot of dates to sacrifice.
Yep.
And let me just get everybody caught up. You're listening to Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball Podcast. We're on with former NBA official Derek Stafford, one of the best in the business. 30 years, Derek. Did they go by fast? And you said when you first started, the NBA was struggling. Could you envision – the gain in popularity and stability the league made from your entrance into your retirement?
Not at all. I mean, I knew people liked basketball, but I didn't realize that it was spread like this, not only in the States, but even overseas. Just no clue, and had no idea that the revenue would be what it is. I knew people liked basketball, you know, from playing high school basketball. You knew people liked it, but you just – on a professional level, I had no idea it would grow like this. And I don't think anybody did. I got to give Commissioner Stern credit for having the vision and putting some of the things in place that he did in order to make it work. But, no, I don't even think he envisioned it growing like this.
That's crazy. When you look at it going down now, that we had in the final eight, are there any teams, Derek, that have stuck out in your mind as far as being able to be that team that possibly takes home the trophy from what you see right now? Not going by past, you know, a lot of people go by past history. If you go by right now and you had to make a judgment at this time, who would probably be the teams you're looking at in your final?
I just don't – there are some great teams in the West and there are some great teams in the East, but I just don't think anybody can beat Golden State in a 7-game series. I think somebody could beat them 3 out of 5, but to beat them 4 out of 7 is going to be extremely difficult because they have such great shooters. great shooters. Yeah. So it's really going to be hard, even with DeMarcus being out, which was a big blow for them that people don't talk about. I mean, it's a tremendous blow. But they still have guys that can score. Houston is the team, one of the teams that can beat them. But everybody on Houston's team has to play well every night. I mean, Clay can have a kind of off night, and if Steph's playing okay and KD playing okay, they still can win because everybody else is just going to do their thing. But if Harden doesn't get 40, if Chris Paul didn't have a great night, if Aaron Gordon didn't have a great night, if somebody didn't come off the bench and have a great night, they can't beat them. And even when they beat them, I mean, just think about it. Golden State did not play their best game. Steph Curry probably played one of the worst games of his career. And if they call offensive foul on James Harden, Golden State still might have won the game.
Oh, the last drive, huh?
Yep.
Derek,
and that's
how
close it is with those guys being off.
That's how good those guys are with those guys being off.
But what's the question? Go ahead. I'm sorry. I missed your question.
No, I'm sorry, Derek. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was going to ask you, you mentioned Harden. How hard is it to officiate a guy like Harden who has the ball in his hands so often, so much, and does so much with it when he has it?
You know, the difference with Harden as opposed to some of our other great scorers, I mean, we've had scorers that would draw contact and seek out contact in certain situations. You know, Harden's one of those guys, he's developed a skill where he seeks contact on every play, every shot. And he's pretty good at it. I mean, and he can shoot and still make the ball, even though he make the shot, even though he's trying to force contact. So that makes him one of the toughest guys to referee because he's always trying to create contact on every play. Some guys have an open shot, they're going to take the shot. He's going to have an open shot and see the defender coming, and he's going to do something still to try to go at the defender as opposed to just shooting the basketball. And that's what makes him difficult to guard. And if the defensive player is not in a legal guarding position, as we call it, the foul is going to be on the defender, even though the offensive player went out the way to make the contact.
Wow.
And that's a rule I think that should change because we started refereeing that way when Ronnie Nunn became the boss. You know, Ronnie Nunn sort of changed it, whereas a defensive player was out of position, the offensive player could go get him. I never liked it and still don't. If the defensive player is, to me, if he's going – even though he's not vertical and he's going in a straight line, the offensive player should not be able to step to the side and draw the contact, in my opinion. But that's the way the rule was changed.
Wow.
Hey, we got some listeners that have tuned in that may want to ask you a question or two. Derek, is it okay if we try to get a couple of guys in?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Area code 615, you're on with the great Derek Stafford, longtime NBA official on Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball podcast.
Hello there. This is Lawrence Caldwell. Hey, Derek.
How you doing?
Hey, how are you?
All right. He's talking to both Derek. How you doing, Mr. LC?
Hey, I just want them to know that I played ball with your older brother, Booker, and with your other older brother too, Claude, and watch you play. We all from the hood over in Detroit. But I wanted to know if you guys are watching the play as far as the contact under the basket there. You know, how these guys getting beat up under there. Everybody want to stay out, even 7-footers, and shoot the long 3-pointer instead of going under the basket and beat up and shoot a 3-footer or something. You know, what do you think about that?
Well, if the question directed to me, the contact today is not nearly as tough as it was when I first started officiating because we really don't have that many guys that post up like they used to. So.
Right.
The younger guys may miss some plays in the post because they're not used to seeing them as much as we did when I first started officiating. Because when I first started, everybody had a center with a low post game. but we don't really have that now. We don't really have that many big guys that post up. So a guy like Embiid might draw a little more contact, and some guys may allow it just because they're not used to seeing it as much. So that's the only thing I can say. And here again, back to the point about, you know, people see things differently. You know, one guy might think the contact affected the shot, and the next guy may think it didn't. So that's the problem that we have, is trying to get everybody to see things the same way, which is virtually difficult, virtually impossible.
Last quick one. Do you think the game is going to go back under the hoop, or has it been spread so far away from the hoop?
You know, I've got more involved with basketball now from the player aspect since I stopped officiating this year. And so we've been doing some little clinics and stuff at my church. I got with some coaches, and I've been watching, you know, some of the AAU stuff, watching these kids play. And it looks like right now it's going to be away from the basket for a while, because the coaches are coaching all the big guys along with the small guys to do the same thing. You know, big guys are not penalized for shooting threes. Coaches not yelling at them, telling them to get under the board. So I think the AAU coaches have joined what the NBA is doing. The high school coaches have kind of joined what the NBA is doing. So I really don't see it changing anytime soon. I think what's going to have to happen is, you know, somebody, there's going to have to be 2 6'11", 7-footers that are just huge, and people decide they're going to put them underneath. And until that happens and they start pounding people, I think it's going to remain the same, because Shaq, them, they criticize Embiid for shooting the threes, but he can shoot them. I mean, and he makes them, and he likes being out there. So he's not going in the post. He's not posting up 15, 20 times a game. He's just not doing it. And he's one of the guys right now that could do it and get away with it, because nobody has anybody that can match up with him. But everybody's playing the same game from what I can see.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And, Derek, I appreciate you taking the time out. Give me a shout-out from Motown, and tell your mother Happy Mother's Day. You know I'll be sending her a card.
Thank you, sir. You tell you have a good – thank you for calling, my man. You have a good evening. I appreciate you.
Yes.
Take care of yourself. Derek, man, you have been – this show, man, you've been fantastic. I got to ask, you were talking about Joel Embiid. If you look at it like right now, you know, these guys, it's kind of right now, you don't know who's a center, who's listed as power forward. But as you look at the game right now and you think of a guy like Joel Embiid, tell me, have you seen a player in your time of refereeing? So that's like 1988. So starting from back then, have you seen a player that has the skill set of Nikola Jokic?
I mean, our centers today are very, very talented. I can't think of any center that I've seen in my 30-year career that is talented as Jokic, call him the Joker, and Embiid. I mean, these guys can pass, they can dribble, they bring the ball up the court. I mean, back in the day, that was unheard of. If Shaq got a rebound, even though he might could dribble, you didn't know because he gave the ball up. So, yeah, these guys are very talented. I haven't seen people like them, and that's what I'm saying. All the kids now, 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", 6'11", they all got handle. They're dribbling the ball. They're shooting threes. So that's why I say I think it's here to stay for a while. I think this is the new wave of basketball. The big men are not just going to be locked in down in the post. It's just not going to happen. Look at DeMarcus. I mean, he's finally shown what kind of skill set he has. I mean, people didn't know he could handle the ball like he does, make passes, shoot as well as he does. But these big men are talented, and people are allowing them, coaches are allowing them to do what they can do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Ricky, I want to ask both of you. Ricky, you asked, do you like the way where the game is headed? And the reason I say that is because we talk about the perimeter. You still got guys that's going to come on the scene like Bol Bol. I know you're familiar with Bol Bol, Ricky, right? Both of you guys familiar with Manusa. Yeah. So with guys like that coming on the scene, Ricky, do you like the way the game is headed, or do you prefer
I am still a fan of the old school, during the days of the Pistons and Bulls and Knicks and those great rivalries. But, man, I enjoy this style as well. Now, you give me my druthers. I want to see Mason and those guys in Oakley battling some guys under the boards. But, hey, it's a new day, and I'm all for it.
What do you think, Derek?
I'm you know, it's exciting either way. I mean, when I used to see, you know, Buck Williams and Karl Malone and those guys bow down in the post, just like you said, Oakland, those guys. Hey, man, it was fun. You know, as long as Ricky Mahorn and those guys setting those tough screens, guys going through the lane, getting pops. I mean, I enjoyed that basketball. But I, like you said, I enjoy this basketball now, too. I mean, I enjoy seeing the 110, 115 as opposed to the 78 to 79. I mean, it just is more exciting. So I like the game the way it is now. I mean, I would love to see us add the low post back into the game. But as far as the physicality, I don't really think we need it in basketball because let's take advantage of these guys' athleticism and let them play and let them run and let them score. But, hey, let's still block some shots and let's still play some good defense and let's post up and see some post moves every now and then. So I'm more inclined to say I like it is because even from a referee standpoint, man, refereeing in Detroit back in the day, 78, 79, 80, man, you went for a long night. A lot of missed shots, a lot of rebounds, a lot of boxing out. I mean, it was tough.
And I loved every minute of it, Derek.
I feel you, man.
Hey,
I was drained when it was over, my brother.
Hey, Derek, the last time you were on here, you told us about Michael Jordan. And you know the myth of Michael. You guys gave him all kind of calls. Would you once again tell our listeners who may not have heard you the first time you were on how Michael got what he got out there on the court?
Hey, man, Michael, there's a couple of things I can tell you about Michael. Number one, Michael knew the rules. Now, whether he actually read the rule book or how he learned the rules, I have no idea. But he would question you on a rule in a heartbeat, and you better know the answer because a lot of times he would. Nobody played as hard as Michael that I've ever refereed. I mean, this guy played 48 minutes if he was on the court 48 minutes like it was the first minute of the game. This is the way he played. And good players don't need breaks. Good players create their own breaks. So I can only speak for me on what's going on the inside. I can't speak for anybody else what's going on the inside of their head. But for me, I never gave Michael anything. I never went out of my way to give him anything. I didn't say, oh, that's Michael, and maybe at the end of the day, he respected me, you know, because he knew that I was just going to call the game the way I saw it. And if he committed a foul, he was going to get it. And I never forget when I called a check on him, you know, he came over and said a couple of things. I said, all right. And then finally I hit him with a check and he looked at me and said, you like that thing. You enjoyed that thing. You know, and I wanted to laugh so bad, but, you know, I knew the cameras were on, you know. But that's just the kind of guy he was, man. He played hard. He didn't expect anything. He didn't want anything. And from my mindset, I don't feel like I gave him anything. You know, people will say, and I would love to sit down and watch some old tape with anybody and show me where he got breaks. I mean, show it to me in black and white. I mean, you can think whatever, but I just want to see it. I want to see it. Because he won a lot of years, man, where they didn't win anything. See, people forget that. Well, he got his butt whooped every night. And even when they put together a good team, they still couldn't get past Detroit. So they took a lot of whoopings. Now, when he started winning, you know, people want to say he got breaks, but you would have to show me because I don't think so.
Hey, let's go to our listener line. And area code 361. You're on the Derek Gervin As Good As It Gets basketball podcast with the great Derek Stafford, longtime NBA official.
Yeah, hello?
Hello, yes, you're on the air.
Hey, this is me, Felix Cornell out in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Hey, Felix.
Hey, Felix, how you doing, brother? You're on with Derek Stafford.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of interesting. I have a question for Derek.
Okay.
Does the NBA dictate certain matchups on a nightly basis, or right now we're on a big stage, the playoffs? Dictate. Let's say you had LeBron James crying for calls that he didn't get in one game. Does the NBA dictate to the referee association, let's watch what's going on here?
Well, to try and answer your question, we don't like making mistakes. So let me say that first of all. We don't like making mistakes, and management doesn't like us making mistakes. So what we try to do is if there is a situation where we're missing plays, we'll talk about those plays and we'll try to get those plays right, and we'll look at tape prior to the next game to make sure we don't make the same mistake. We're not looking at these plays to give anybody an advantage. We're just looking at these plays to try to get the game, to try to referee the game properly. The same thing we're doing during the regular season. It's just different in the playoffs because everybody's now watching these one or two series, so things that people wouldn't pick up on during the regular season, they see it in the playoffs. But no, we're not going to say, okay, well, the Clippers didn't get the benefit of the calls according to the breakout in the first game, so now we're going to make up by giving them more calls the second game. No, we just try our best to go from game to game and try to get every play right. Do we make mistakes? Absolutely. Do we know that the first game wasn't worked as well as it should have been? Yes, we know. So we try to go out and add a little more pressure on ourselves by making sure the second game is worked properly. Properly.
Does the NBA,
not giving anybody
does the
an
NBA
advantage
step
properly.
In on that?
Well, you have people in management that will always, even during the regular season, that might come to a game or might come to the hotel and sit down and look at plays with people if they feel like you're missing plays. But they're not going to come in and say, well, you know the Clippers were screwed last night, so we need to make up by giving them some plays. No, nothing like that would ever happen.
That's fair. You mind if I ask you one more question?
Oh,
not at all.
Go ahead.
Do you think the NBA, okay, let's you see it all the time, okay, illegal screens, traveling. Is the NBA more of an entertainment setting, unlike NCAA or even high school, that they don't let that stuff go for the most part? And where you
well,
may
it's,
let...
It's twofold. We have our own board of governors. We have our own rules and competition committee that can set aside rules. So
right.
They look at a lot of tape, and they try to decide what's legal and not illegal. The first time I saw the jump stop with Dominique, where he would jump off both feet, land, and dunk, I called it travel.
Right.
Because he jumped with the ball in his hand, landed with the ball in his hand. The NBA said no.
Back in the day, in the 80s and 90s, it was being called. Now it just seems like they're just letting the stars
exactly.
do whatever.
So let me make my point. Yeah, and this is my point. So the NBA looked at this move, and they decided that they were going to put in the rule book to make a jump stop legal.
Right.
So these are some of the things they do sometimes. But the other part of it is a lot of times you think it's a travel, but you have to be 100% certain as to when that player actually took his first step. And even though that sounds easy, you have to decide when that player had possession of the ball coming off of that dribble, not gathering possession or gaining possession, but actually had possession and took that first step. And so a lot of times, those plays that look like travels.
I was going to say, like in high school, there's no such thing as a zero step, so I can see where they infiltrate those rules too.
And that's what happens in high school. So the guys in high school will start to copy some of the things that the pros do, and even when they do it legally, a high school or college official, because they've never seen it and they're not used to it, they will call it a travel, so everybody will think it's a travel because it looked funny. And in actuality, because I went to a lot of high school games this year, it's not a travel.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It's not a violation.
Right.
And I guarantee you a lot of plays that you look at that you think are travels, if you and I sat down and looked at them on tape and we said, okay, let's see when he gathered the ball, you would be surprised how many of those plays are not travels.
Did you watch it? And we do miss travel. And don't get
me wrong, we do miss travels. I mean, these guys are fast. They're quick. Their footwork is exceptional. And so you got to lock in on the offense and the defense. So sometimes, yeah, we do miss travels, for sure. But not nearly as bad as the public thinks, because the NBA will change the rule.
I'm one of the official friends, man. I'm an official myself down over here. I call it the high school level. So I'm not getting on you. I'm just trying to figure out the mentality.
It's the same as yours. I mean, I worked high school and I worked college. Hey, man, I just try to read the rule book and I try to get the interpretation from them and try to call what they want me to call. But sometimes they will change the rule in order to make a play legal.
I mean, Harden stepped back according to our rules and the way the Board of Governors and the Rules and Interpretation Committee want us to interpret it. It's a legal move.
Right.
That's good question. We sure appreciate you, man.
Absolutely. Anytime. I appreciate y'all taking my call.
I have really good questions.
Hey,
Derek.
Hey. Go ahead, Derek. No, you go, Derek.
I wanted to ask before we get off of here, and then I know Ricky's got one more question. I only got one more. Derek, you were talking about Michael Jordan. Looking at the game today, Ricky knows I've been a big Kawhi Leonard fan basically since he's been in the league. Looking at what he does on both ends right now, does he remind you, does he have a game? I know he's not as fluid as Mike, but does he do a lot of things that remind you of Mike?
Hey, man, if he had more personality, y'all would be calling him Mike. hey, he can flat out play. I mean, he can play. He doesn't quite have the lift that Michael has. So, you know, Michael had that exceptional lift, and that's what separated him from a lot of people. Hey, man, but in my opinion, like Jay said today, man, Kawhi Leonard, in my opinion, is the second best player in the league right now.
Second best, huh?
Yep.
Now, I got to ask this, Ricky, because I know I think right now you might be on the same page as Derek. What is this thing when they say two-way player? So I'm trying to get an understanding. And they say Kawhi is the best two-way player. The game is only played two ways. So if you're the best two-way player, doesn't that mean you're basically the best player?
Right.
they said he's one of the best two-way players. I don't know.
Well, they always say he's the number one two-way player, and then they had Paul George. Now you got some other guys that snuck in there, like Giannis has become a two-way player. But do you see right now, you would have KD as your number one player, or would you have LeBron?
Hey man, KD right now is my number one player. He's the best two-way player I know, in my opinion. And, man, he can get his shot so easy. He plays good defense. He blocks shots. He rebounds. He can bring the ball up the court. And he can lock down. If you notice, they don't hide him. They'll put him on anybody. They put him on LeBron. So KD will guard the best player on another team, same as Kawhi. Now, you take James Harden, who's a good player, but they're going to hide him on defense. Right now, he's checking Green because Green is not a great outside shooter.
Right.
So that's, to me, what separates him. Kawhi Leonard and KD, they will guard your best player, and they will shut down your best player. LeBron, to me, has reached his peak, and he's starting to tail off a little bit. We'll see how he does next year. But this year he got hurt. He tailed off a little bit. So, in my opinion, he's still number three. But I got to pick KD and Kawhi over him right now just because of the way they're playing.
Yeah, he's definitely, and it's time for him to slow down too. At that age, with all that mileage on him. Hey, but before we let you go, and Derek, my first statement to you is, man, you need to write a book about your 30 years. Man, you could probably write two chapters. You could write the old school book, then the new school book. But seriously, man, you need to put something on paper. You have a tremendous career. And all these great stories to tell. But my question to you, is it one call you ever made that everybody thought you were wrong, but you knew you had it right and you were proven right? Is it one call that just stands out to you? I know it was so many over 30 years, but is it one or two that you really feel good about?
Oh, yeah. It's one call I'll never forget. Matter of fact, it might have been my first or my second year. We didn't have that many TV games back then, so we had a Saturday or Sunday afternoon TV game, and what made it unusual is the power in the building went out, and it was Portland and the Lakers back when both teams were real strong. Matter of fact, I think that year is the year Portland went to the finals. But I was working with Jake O'Donnell. And Jake O'Donnell had a huge and a long run-in with Portland. You know, he and Drexler, for some reason, hated each other. Somebody mentioned it the other night, and it was real. And the fans picked up on it. So Jake told me going on the floor, he knew I was young. I think it was my first year. He said, they won't even know you on the floor tonight, man. They're going to be on me so bad. And I had never seen anything like it. We came out of town. We walked out the tunnel, man. They started booing. Somebody had a referee costume with a rope around his neck, hanging from the rafters with Jake O'Donnell number on it. And I was like, oh, my God. I had never seen anything like this. So the game, Portland took a shot in the corner, a three. Well, it might have been a two. I didn't think we had three then. It might have been a two at the buzzer, and I wiped it out because of the shot clock violation. The shot clock went off right before the ball was released. Man, Portland fans booed us out of there, threw stuff at us, and Jake looked at me. He said, man, these people already hate me. He said, God knows, I hope you're right. And sure enough, the TV crew, because at the time we didn't have a replay in the locker room. We didn't have any way of seeing it. So the TV people came in, and they said, well, we think y'all probably want to know about this play. And they said, hey, man, Derek, you got it right. It was a shot clock violation. Man, I never forgot that. Never forgot that.
So you were able to get out of town by the skin of your teeth.
Oh, man, yeah, because, man, you talk about fans and a relationship with a referee that was not good, man. And Clyde and Jake carried all the way to Houston. And that's why, and a lot of people don't know this story, but I'll share this with you. That's why Jake retired, because they told him that year if Houston went to the finals, he wasn't going to work, and he retired. That's how bad the relationship got between those two. And Jake was the number one rated fish at the time.
But I don't,
I'm sorry,
Derek. He may have been the number one rated fish.
You're breaking up, Rick.
He was the number one rated fish at the time.
Wow.
And he never came back. He retired after that. Never came back.
Derek,
wow.
I got to thank
you. Can you guys hear me okay? Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah, we hear you. Derek, we're going to let you get out of here. I want to say this, though. Ricky, let me tell Derek this. Derek, you, man, you know, a lot of people talk about being an NBA player, and, you know, a lot of people have had a dream of being a player. But I got to tell you, man, having you on this show today and to have a referee, even I'm getting excited just hearing you talk about even bringing up that Portland team. So that's the team with Cliff Robinson and Kersey and all those guys. So, for you to see the evolution of the game like that, man, you've seen the game grow so much. That proves that it's not just about being a player. There are so many other ways that people can contribute in the game of basketball. And that's important to me because, you know, we talk to the kids all the time. And everybody can't go out and be a player. But, man, I appreciate you so much, man. It's been, fantastic to have a guy here that's actually been in the fire. Any question that we have, you've pretty much experienced it. And to me, that's been very special, man. And I want to thank you for keeping your word and coming back on here and spending time with Ricky and myself again, man. I really appreciate you.
Hey, thank you guys, man. I enjoyed it. I appreciate it. I love the job and I love the league. And but I'm going to be honest. You know, I'm going to tell the truth whenever somebody asks me a question. Sometimes it may not come out the way they want it, but I'm going to be completely honest. And thank you guys for having me.
Hey, thank you, man. Talk to you later,
Derek.
All right.
Take care of yourself, Derek. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Mr. Hampton.
Man, that dude is so awesome.
Absolutely, man. I'm fantastic. I feel like, you remember when we interviewed Oscar and Dr. J and all those guys, I feel like we just interviewed somebody in the same capacity. He was top of the line referee. And, man, the show was great, Ricky. So I thank you again.
Thank you, brother. And we'll do it again real soon.
And listeners, thank you very much for tuning in and even for calling in. It's been a great show. We hope everyone has a good evening. It's time for the Celtics in Milwaukee. And we'll talk to you again in the next few days, hopefully, Ricky. And we'll do something again. All right. So everybody have a good evening. Have a good evening, my man. Watch the game, and I hope you enjoy your evening.
Okay.
All right, take care.
Until next time, you've been listening to Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball Podcast.